You know him. You came here to see him. Y'all go crazy. Josh Johnson is here, everybody.
My friends had a baby, right? And a lot of my friends are having babies either this year or some of them already had them last year. Basically, since the pandemic, I guess my friends have had a lot of time together. Okay. Basically, I met one of my friend's babies and I could tell that I was the baby's first black person. Like, I could tell. It was just so apparent. It was like, as soon as we looked at each other, he was like, he went through all of the emotions at one time. Like, because when they rolled him over and he looked at me, he was like, oh. You know? And it was an odd feeling. I didn't even bring it up. I could just tell. You know what I mean? Like, I could feel it. And look, I'm not even saying it's the baby's fault. Baby got a white family. Hadn't got around to exploring the world yet, you know? I was the baby's first black person, and it made me think about, I don't know if I fully remember the real first time, but I kind of remember what I at least think was me meeting my first white person. It's very important that the day before this happened, I was at like a family picnic, right? I was at this family picnic and extended family had come. So I'm seeing cousins I don't normally see and like all of the older people are there and everything. And so some of the kids are playing, some of them running around, right? There was one kid that was running around, knocking a bunch of stuff over, one of my older cousins, right? And he had to be like maybe 8 or 9 or something, but he's running around. And his parents were telling him, hey, slow down or stop or be still real quick. We're about to eat, all that stuff. And then he's still running around, knocking drinks over every once in a while. And finally, my great aunt, his grandma, as he was passing, she did that grandma move where she just snatched him real quick, right? Like, even his parents couldn't catch up. His parents were running like, come on now. She was like, bow. Like, it was incredible. She snatched a little arm and stopped him right there. And then she looked at him and he looked at her. And then she said through her teeth, so you know she meant it, right? She was like, if you don't be still, I'm going to slap the black off you. So the next day, when I met this kid, all I could think was, it can happen. Ooh, I gotta be extra nice to him. Something clearly going on at home. I was watching a documentary about like serial killers and like sociopaths and stuff, and how basically they do these profiles where they try to identify whatever these like specific things are with their personality that make them the way they are, right? A lot of the traits and a lot of the signs. And one of the things they were saying in the documentary is that one of the best things you can do for anyone that's suffering from these sort of things is to find it as early as possible. That way you can help them before they do harm, you know? But then they also said that it's difficult to identify some of these traits when people are kids, because a lot of the list of what like psychopaths and sociopaths do as kids is a list of things that kids already do. Not the full list, but like a considerable amount of it, you know? And one of the things in the list is long-term bedwetting, right? Like bedwetting at like 13, 14, whatever, right? And it triggered a memory for me. Because when I was little, I'd be like 12 or something, I got invited to a sleepover, which was a big deal for me. I'm an only child, you know? I getting invited to a sleepover as a kid is like going out to the club as an adult. You know what I mean? It's the same energy. It's like me and my boys ride tonight. And so we got over there and we're having a great time. We're watching movies, we're playing games, we're like in the yard playing football and stuff. But it wasn't until it was time to go to bed that I realized that there was a hierarchy here. Because the kid who invited us, that was hosting us, only had so much room in his room. So his closest friend stayed in his room with him. And the rest of us stayed in the living room, right? And his parents made these little bulgy, like, blankets and stacks of quilts and stuff for us to sleep on and everything. And I know it shouldn't have been a big deal to me because we had been playing all day. But if you've ever been to a sleepover, you know that when you're supposed to be asleep is when the good stuff happens. That's when the real conversation is had. And that's when all the memories get made. And I'm out here in the living room with the losers. So I get ready to go to bed, right? And I was laying with this other kid because it was two to each for everything. And it's not really important to the story, but the kid's name was DeMarvin, right? And so we fall asleep and I wake up middle of the night. Don't even know why I woke up, you know? And I notice when I wake up that just like the side of my leg and the side of my elbow are wet. And so I look over and DeMarvin not there, but his whole spot is wet. And I sat up, and as I sat up, I looked up and DeMarvin was sitting across from me watching me sleep. That's strike one, all right? Any child who watches you sleep, that should be on the list right there. And now as he watching me sleep, he got his legs crossed. That's strike two. How are you gonna sit there and cross your legs and watch somebody sleep like a villain? He's watching me sleep, has his legs crossed, and when I sit up, you ever so scared you assume you're not awake? It was so freaky to just see him there already staring at me. I was like, I'm tripping. I need to go back to bed. This kid looks at me, legs crossed, and goes, Joshua? That's strike three. Full name? Full name. We're both kids. Full name? You're the devil. This kid looks at me and goes, Joshua? I've wet the bed. But I'm gonna tell everyone it was you. I'm not gonna lie, I was like, what? That even makes sense? Like, I'm the side of my leg is wet. Your whole spot was wet. People saw you sleep here. What are you talking about? You gonna tell everybody that I wet the bed? And then he goes from this like crazy intense stare to his face softening, and he's like, do you have a change of clothes? And as soon as he says it, I get it. As soon as that kid says that, I fully understand, because that's got to be terrifying. You know, you're at a sleepover, maybe you don't get invited to many, and you wet the bed. You're around a bunch of 12-year-old boys and you wet the bed. You'll never live it down. Wetting the bed at a sleepover at 12 is like wetting the bed when you go out clubbing with your boys. It's like you killing the whole vibe right now. I knew we shouldn't have invited Jerry. He wetting the bed. Can't handle his liquor at all. So as soon as he said it, I got it. I really did. I understood. I was like, dang, that's tough, right? I don't know what I would do. I wet the bed. I'm trying to make friends with other kids. I'm a living room kid as well, so I'm already a loser. And then I wet the bed. I wouldn't live it down. And so I looked at him. I was like, ah, man, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I only have the clothes that I have. I don't have any extra clothes. And then he goes, oh, okay. And I don't know where he got it from, but as soon as he said okay, he grabbed a cup of water and he threw it on me, right? And as soon as he threw the water on my crotch, I was like, ow, ow, what's wrong with you? And the first kid woke up and DeMarvin was like, Josh wet the bed. And this is my thing. It would have been so much simpler to wake up in the middle of the night, realize that you wet the bed, go to the kitchen, which I'm assuming he went to, grab a mug, which I'm assuming he did, fill it with water, which he must have had, and then just poured it on me while I was sleeping. That would have been so much easier. I wouldn't have known. I would have woken up and been like, damn, y'all, I'm sorry. I thought I was done with this. I'm killing the vibe right now. It's so much more insane to wake up, realize you wet the bed, sit across from me, wait for me to wake up, staring at me the whole time, crossing your legs, saying my full name, telling me your plan, and then throwing water on me. I don't know where DeMarvin is now. I'm assuming that he's alive and well. But I do know for a fact that someone, somewhere, is dead. My other friends had kids in like 20, 22, 20, 23 and stuff. So then their kids are like at that age where they're like over a year old. They're basically at that age where you keep still saying like months. You know what I'm talking about? Like, nobody can just say, like, 1.2. I don't know. It's just as accurate. You know what I mean? Don't make me do the math. Because anything past 12, but I know 12 months is a year, right? I know 18 months, year and a half. Once you hit me with a 27 months, I'm like... And so their baby is 16 months, 1.6. And they have a beautiful little boy, right? But it's funny, I didn't even think about this until I was hanging out at their house, you know. When it comes to our nature as people, right? We have the id, we have the ego, we have the superego, right? The id is like your lowest form. It's the impulsive part of your brain that is repulsed by pain. It's excited by pleasure, seeks it at all costs, right? The superego is your judgment. It's sort of your higher self in a way. It's how you weigh and balance some of your actions. A lot of religions attribute it to like the God in us trying to tell us what's right and wrong morally. And the ego is what mediates between the id and the superego. So then you'll have an id moment. Superego will judge it. Ego will process it, right? Id is like, I would very much like to sleep with this person. Superego is like, don't do that. That's your friend's wife. And then ego is like, but she's so hot. Didn't say this was all going to be a good person, right? But it's interesting being around babies because babies are all like cave person. They're all it. They're not weighing anything yet. It's just, I would like to do that. I'd like to not do that. They're not thinking about the bigger picture, right? There was one point where my friend sat her baby down in his little seat, right? And she laid her coffee on the counter, right? And then she had to go grab something else. And as soon as she laid the coffee down on the counter, the baby looked at the coffee And you could tell, and I don't know why I do this, but I always give babies in my head, I always give them deep voices when they're thinking, right? Because you saw the baby, I saw the baby look at the cup and was like, the coffee is in the cup. But what if it wasn't? And so then this baby went to knock the cup over, right? Knock the cup over and just go ahead and watch the whole spill. And I don't know how, but babies are fast and slow at the same time, right? Because as soon as, so she sat the baby down, walked away. The baby looked at the cup and looked at me. I looked at the cup and looked at the baby. And I swear, as soon as I started moving to stop the baby, baby was like, oh! As soon as we locked eyes, it became an emergency. I gotta get this cup over. I have full legs. I was running at this baby. I was running at the baby to stop him from knocking off the coffee so hard that I was scared I wouldn't stop. I was scared I was gonna take out the coffee and the baby, right? But I'm trying to make my way across the room and the baby just, oh! And right as he slapped the cup of coffee over, I got to him and I pulled him up and away from the coffee. And he was just looking at me, like looking me in my eyes, you know, and he didn't say anything, but you could tell he was thinking, I win. I don't know if y'all saw what's happening in L.A., but the Archdiocese in L.A. just settled for $750 million with the lawsuits of everyone who had claimed abuse while they were patrons of the church. $750 million. I think $800 million when you count in some other stuff. That brings the Catholic Church's total payout to $1.5 billion. Anyone else would be closed. That's so much money. $1.5 billion that you had. You had $1 billion to pay out with. That's crazy, you know? There's no other company I could really think of that could do that much harm and be able to afford the payout. You know, you'd have to be like a gun manufacturer or something. It's so jarring, you know? I think that's what really bothers me about it. It's like there's the payout. And anytime someone has to pay, Even if it hurts a little to pay, if they had the money, it feels like less justice. Cause they had it. You know? You gotta make them pay a number that they genuinely don't know. That I don't know if we can do. Good, that's exactly how much I want. You know? $1.5 billion worth of damage that you also admit you did. You know? This isn't like hush money. This is a settlement where everybody knows what happened and everybody knows how you handled it. You know? That's so jarring. And it makes you, how can that not affect your faith? You know what I mean? You went to this place. This is supposed to be the safest place in the world. This is supposed to be the place where you like lay down every burden, not pick up extra. Do you know what I mean? I don't even know where you go from here. It's beyond PR. You can't be like, but we also donate a lot to. I don't know if I want you around anybody right now. That's my thing. I don't even just care about the money. I'm glad that they had to pay, and I'm glad that, you know, survivors are getting something for all those years of trauma, all those years of therapy, all those years of like trying to navigate the world and people looking at you like it must be you. If you're dealing with something all day, it does not escape your mind and you can't even hold down a job because the way that people are around you affects everything that you do. I'm glad that they have something in return from that, you know, because you can't undo what's been done, right? But like who's in jail? Is anybody in jail? We always forget that jail would be better. Do you know what I mean? I'm sure that that's what they want, but it takes so long to get justice. Half of the monsters are like dead. And then the other half are like still alive, but then there's like statute of limitations, which I don't know. I don't fully understand statute of limitations because I understand that it's constitutional to have a fair and speedy trial, right? But we don't seem to do that either. You know what I mean? Like if Young Thug's trial can last 75 years, why can't you be like, you too? Get over here. I know it was a long time ago. Doesn't change the fact that you did it. You know? That's what's so painful about it too, you know, because then it affects you whether you know it or not, whether you're, you know, like Christian, Catholic, whatever. You try to tell somebody about Jesus and they're like, oh, I've heard. Do you know what I mean? It's a burden that we all carry. It's a weight that like is inescapable. And it happened to all of us. Obviously not in direct enough of a way that I'm like claiming some victimhood or anything, but it also, you yourself might trust this person that you find out is a monster, which then makes you question everything this person said to you. Maybe they didn't do anything to you, but they did something so horrific to someone else that you're like, how can that person that did those things be right about what happens when you die? Like, I know the two seem like they don't have anything to do with each other, but they are so directly related because this person is basically telling you the keys to a good life, the keys to being a good person, and the keys to salvation. And then you realize that they were dangling those keys over someone else to keep their silence, right? That's too heavy, you know? I don't even know where you would go from here. Because nothing that is said by anyone in the church seems to fill the void that the church has created, both between people and themselves and between the people who had harm done to them and the way to redemption. It's just so far, you know? And the people writing now, the people who write for the church, the people who are the spokespeople, the people that we see, they don't have it like that, really. Like they're like when they say their words, it doesn't hit like the Bible hit. There's no vows that can bridge the gap that's been created, right? There's no yees that make me feel better. You know? Cause what, I mean, I don't know. What is the truth taught by a liar? Do you know what I mean? Even if you really believe, you believe it from the bottom of your heart, this Weinstein is going to be the guy who spreads the word? Ah, that seems short-sighted. And then how they handled it, too, because they handled it like the mob would handle it. You know? They didn't look at those people, those patrons, those souls that they have a responsibility to. That they took up the responsibility to. No, I personally don't know anyone who was made to go to seminary. Everybody there is a volunteer, you know? And so you'd find out. Sometimes it was the priests themselves telling their superior, I got a problem, right? And superior was like, we'll get you out of town. That was the move for a long time. It's why so much damage was done, you know? If your toilet is broken, you get it out the house. You don't move it to another family's house to ruin their life. Do you see what I mean? You know what I mean? And it's just, I don't know. It's I know I kind of like land on this thing a lot. And so maybe I'm doing the point a disservice, you know, because a part of me hopes against hope that I don't care how it happens. I want everything that those priests were teaching to be real, right? I want it to be the truth. So that way we all know in our hearts that there's a hell. And I know that's like way more fire and brimstone. That's not like the uplifting message or anything, but I don't know. I just feel like it would be nice. It'd be nice to, you know, finally get justice. 20 years too late, the person's passed away, and then you're like, nah, God got him.
When I can.